This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, by my good friend in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, we are entering... Actually, we're in the middle of the happiest time of the year for me as a sports fan, which is NFL draft time. I love the NFL draft. The NFL draft is it's perfect entertainment for me because it's a chance to think about new players. It's a chance to think about improving teams. And I just love all the media that swirls around during NFL draft time. But I have to tell you, Pipe, how I had to spend day one of the NFL draft last year. So
this sounds ominous to me.
It is ominous, and I want your sympathy. So I'll just go into the story saying, you know, exactly the reaction I'm looking for. So, but I think you can relate to this, given the kind of things you have to do from time to time in your professional life. So we send our kids to a classical school. It is a very good school, and we love it. However, this classical school once a year does a big fundraising dinner, a big lavish gala where they invite all kinds of people and a big speaker
Timeout. How lavish is lavish? Is this like hotel rubber chicken? Is this like catered overcooked pasta, or is it like exquisite food?
Dude, so this is somewhere in between hotel rubber chicken and catered exquisite pasta. So my lady did all the desserts for it last year.
So we know those were spectacular.
The desserts were spectacular. I've forgotten what the entree was. So my apologies to anyone who was involved in the entree. But Piper, suffice it to say that this event, they did not consult me ahead of time because this event happened to fall on evening one of the NFL draft.
Well, apparently so, they also did not consult a calendar.
It was awful, dude. It was Thursday night on a prime time. I was very bitter the moment that I found out that it would be competing with the NFL draft. So we used like the great room of a local mega church to host this thing. So immediately, as soon as I got there, I was helping my lady, you know, with food stuff, because when she's doing a big catered event like this as a caterer, I become an employee of hers. So I throw on an apron and I'm like her sous chef for the evening. But order of business number one was to find the facilities guy and get the Wi-Fi password for this particular mega church, because the keynote speaker for the event was this hipster theologian from New York City. Should I say his name? Would it be bad if I said his name?
Nah, go for it.
Okay, so this guy actually has some history at Union. This guy used to be like...
Oh, I know who this is.
Yeah, this guy used to be like the rock star Bible prophet Union. He underwent a fascinating persona shift at some point during his Union time. This was all before my time at Union. But this guy was your typical kind of, you know, doughy, wrinkled khaki-wearing Southern Seminary dude. But at some point, he like stopped eating and became like gaunt, super cool hipster type of guy. His name is Greg Thornberry, and now he's the president of King's College in New York City. And they booked him to be the keynote speaker. I knew that he was going to do the engage the culture type talk that we'd been hearing for the last 15 years. So full disclosure, I had little to no interest in the talk itself.
This is my surprised face.
This is your surprised face. So you know what talk I'm talking about, though, man. And have we not been hearing that for like a decade plus?
And yet somehow it hasn't quite sunk in at the classical school level.
Dude, right. Maybe we're just a decade behind in classical. I think we're more than a decade. Dude, classical schools are stuck in like, you know, C.S. Lewis time still. But at any rate, this guy got up to give his talk, and he was going on and on about the culture, of course. However, I was happily ensconced near the back of the room, near my buddy from facilities at this local megachurch. And I was streaming the NFL draft on my phone, which was not quite as good as watching it in the friendly confines of my own living room. But that was a pretty darn close second. So that's how I spent night one of the NFL draft last year. Really hopeful that this year is better. Now, do you do a party or anything for the draft, Pipe? What's your draft situation?
Not anymore, because they've broken it up into too many different days. When it used to be like all day, you started at 10 a.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah,
and
that was awesome.
And then like the last three rounds were on Sunday. I would get together with friends and, you know, we would just load up on all of the junk food and the beverages and whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just like Fat Fest for a whole day of I think it was rounds 1 through 3 or 1 through 4 all day Saturday, and it was amazing.
It was amazing, and teams would get like a half hour to make their pick in the first round back in the day. So get this, man. My parents are old school. They're of the persuasion of if you're not throwing up or there's not like a limb dangling off you, you have to go to school, right? Mm-hmm. But my parents, man, from time to time would actually let me stay home to watch the NFL draft. They'd let me stay home from school if it was on during a weekday, which it was during like the 80s and 90s. It wasn't the big primetime TV spectacle that it is now. So they would actually let me stay home. I would settle in on the sofa with all my newspapers and draft memorabilia and listen to Mel Kiper. And man, those were some good times. Those were good. I felt like the king of the world on those days.
Has Mel Kiper jumped the shark?
Not for me, man. Not for me. I go all in on Mel Kiper's podcast during draft time. I don't listen to it too much throughout the year, but I just like his voice. You know, it's sort of synonymous with the NFL draft in the same way that, you know, like Phil Liggett's voice is synonymous with the Tour de France. There are some broadcasters who you just equate with certain things.
Yeah.
And for me, Kiper will never, jump
the shark. He is to the draft what Jim Nance is to
the Masters. Yeah. Exactly. And even if what Piper is saying, even if I like patently disagree with it, I still like the sound of his voice, which is an odd thing to say. So Mel, if you're listening, and I know you are, I just like the sound of your voice. But Pipe, we have a lot of draft related stuff to get to. I could talk about this stuff literally for days on end.
We're gonna have to
keep it short here. But I want to start with a very polarizing prospect. This is a prospect who, if you listen to all the hype in the media, all the media scouts, this guy has rocketed up draft boards. There's even some talk that he could go number one overall to the Cleveland Browns. I think this thing is a joke. I think it's the biggest Ponzi scheme, you know, nonsense in the recent history of the NFL draft. And of course, the player I'm talking about is Josh Allen, quarterback, Wyoming. This guy is the anti-analytics type player in the sense that he passes the eyeball test. He looks like an NFL quarterback, you know, 6'4", 235, runs like a deer, you know, can throw the ball 100 yards in the air. You know, he's got this, you know, Bunyan-esque arm. However, he has been consistently very bad at playing football.
minor detail.
It's a minor detail in that he's being drafted potentially first overall to play football professionally. Piper, what do you make of this Ponzi scheme that is the Josh Allen narrative? And nothing against the kid, man. I'm sure he's a great kid. He can't help it, but I'm just not buying.
So I have two thoughts on this. One from the NFL executive side, the other from the Josh Allen side. So I'll go Josh Allen side first. He has the same coach that Carson Wentz did.
Yeah, which is a positive.
That is the only reason he is being seen as a it's essentially the glow of Carson Wentz that is making him a potential top 10 pick. Because if he had just any other coach, he would be a mid-round developmental prospect because of all the physical talent and the fact that he's never completed 60% of his passes. You know who completed like 70% of his passes in college? Blaine Gabbert and Blake Bortles, two very bad NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So Allen,
yeah,
he's resting in the glow of Carson Wentz's small school success. Now from the NFL executive side.
Yeah, I agree. Hit me with that.
They have the shortest memories in history because they look at a guy like this, you know, 6'5", 240 pounds, rocket arm, everything you just listed, and they think we can turn that guy into a star. How many developmental superstars can you think of? So guys who were bad college quarterbacks who were developed into star NFL quarterbacks.
Man, it's a short list. Like I'm struggling.
I can't
honestly
think of any
to come up with any.
I can think of guys who have bad measurables. So like Russell Wilson, for example, he's 5'11". Yeah. Drew Brees, 5'11".
Those guys were such good college quarterbacks. They threw it all over the yard. They had signature games. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Russell Wilson had so many big games at Wisconsin and NC State.
Right.
And same with Drew Brees. You know, he put Purdue football on the map while he was there.
I can think of small school guys who had great like Carson Wentz, for example, great college careers, bad competition. But again, They had something great about them.
But again, signature wins, big yes. game quarterbacks. Josh Allen, all he's done against Power 5 schools is turn the ball over 8 times, mm-hmm. score 1 time, and lose a whole bunch.
His name is Josh, as we discussed in a previous podcast.
His name is Josh, which is a
quarterback name.
Dude, no, it's not a strong name at all. It's a name that I have serious concerns about.
It's like a brother-in-law name. That's not a quarterback name.
It's a brother. Like, hey, this is my brother-in-law, Josh. You know, he's a youth pastor. You know,
exactly.
Super good dude. I mean,
yeah, good guy. He's a good guy.
He's a great guy, but not to lead your NFL franchise. So, man, I tell you, I've become, if not a fan of the Browns, I've become fascinated by the Browns in this offseason and with all the picks that they have coming up and with John Dorsey in the boat as the new GM. But boy, I hope they do the right thing and pass on Josh Allen. You know, let that be someone else's problem. Let it be someone else's project. You know, the guy Piper that comes closest to mind in terms of, okay, off the charts measurables, you know, kind of an erratic up and down college career, didn't really do a whole lot, was Ryan Tannehill, who, you know, is basically a middling to low end NFL starter at this point when he's healthy.
The difference is that he was a wide receiver for 2 years or a year and then turned into a quarterback. So, like, he was actually developmental in college, whereas Allen has been the star quarterback since he was like 7.
That's right.
And he's still bad at playing quarterback. Well, I mean, bad relative to his competition. I realize he's better than everybody who listens to this podcast and us.
Most definitely, man. Most definitely. But I tell you, I struggle in that top half of the draft to find a good, even developmental fit for a Josh Allen. You know, I mean, if you cannot
turn an inaccurate quarterback into an accurate quarterback. It's never happened.
You can't. You absolutely cannot. I mean, you can't put in what God left out. You know, and the kid can throw the ball a mile, but I don't think he's going to be a good quarterback. I think the Browns should do the right thing and take Sam Darnold. But Pipe, this leads us to a conversation about another Josh. So another quarterback who we have name related concerns about, but a quarterback who his college coach, as it turns out, had concerns about. So Jim Mora Jr. Was the head coach at UCLA, went on one of the NFL talking head shows recently and basically said that he would draft Sam Darnold over his quarterback, Josh Rosen. And he went on to explain that this was because Rosen was quote unquote, the first millennial quarterback, i.e., you know, he's demanding in certain ways. There's concerns about his like country club pedigree, the fact that he was a tennis player and he likes to go yachting in his free time. I actually love Josh Rosen on the field. Like of all the quarterbacks I've watched this year, I like Darnold. You know, Darnold, I think, took a step backwards in terms of, you know, making wise decisions with the ball this year. But I liked the film that I saw of Rosen a lot. Piper, what do you make? I'm especially interested in this kind of country club millennialness of this prospect. What do you make of that? And how concerned would you be if you were an NFL team?
I think it was. I laughed out loud when I heard those comments because they sounded so. I mean, I don't even know what the word is. Just ignorant,
old
for lack
man-ish?
Of a better word. Yeah, I mean, like stereotypical caricature of an old man. You know, the kind of thing like when you read 7 years ago when people were like talking about millennials and they were writing in Entrepreneur Magazine or Inc.com and they're like, well, the millennial generation are entitled people who don't work hard and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's essentially what he said about his own quarterback. My favorite part of those comments, though, was when he said Sam Darnold would be a better cultural fit for the Cleveland Browns than
these
Rosen
kids
would.
Are both from like Orange County, aren't
they?
I mean, they're
both
from
they grew up like 6 miles apart on the beach. Unless there's some like steel, like rundown steel town on the beach where it snows a lot, they're both equally the same cultural fit for Cleveland.
Maybe Sam Darnold's house was actually maybe he lived in like a rundown steel mill, and that's dude. It's so funny to me that's the paradigm still to this day in 2018. Like, oh, he likes to hunt and fish, you know. Therefore, he's a good cultural fit. You know, he's going to be the guy.
And I guess that sort of dovetails with the money. Like, maybe Sam Darnold's family was more middle class, and Rosen's was wealthy. But
yeah.
I'm fairly certain Tom Brady didn't come from a poor family, and I don't think Drew Brees did. And
I
don't think
Kirk
Cousins
doesn't come from a poor family. I mean, Tim Tebow did.
Peyton Manning came from a pretty elite family.
Absolutely.
And Tebow.
I would say
sucked at quarterback, but.
Yeah, the majority of your, like, NFL quarterback prospects probably do come from higher-end families because they've got to have untold thousands of dollars to send these kids from
the passing camps, the Nike camps and whatever.
Yeah, that they go to since toddlerhood, yeah. You know.
Now, I realize we're bordering on something much more cultural, which is the white and black quarterback divide in terms of how quarterbacks are developed. But all that, like, let's not get into that right now and simply say that none of that stands between Josh Rosen and being a successful quarterback. I think the part that made me puzzled the most, though, like most of it made me laugh. The part that puzzled me was where the coach was like, he has other interests and he needs to be coached constantly.
Right.
As if what he wants is this sort of myopic Cro-Magnon of a quarterback who just says, yes, boss, every time the coach says run this play. Because his comment was he needs to understand why about everything. I'm like, don't you want that from your quarterback? Isn't that a sign that they understand how the whole offense works, what the defense is trying to do, how they're trying to combat what the defense is doing? That – I guarantee Tom Brady asks why about everything. Same with Drew Brees. Same with Peyton Manning. Same with Andrew Luck. Same with Russell Wilson. Same with, you know, every single good quarterback wants to know why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of those guys you mentioned, Pipe, are not the archetypal kind of blue collar guys that are out like hunting and fishing with their teammates. You know,
I mean, Tom Aaron Brady Rodgers is an Uggs wearing fashion model. Drew Brees collects jewelry. I just learned recently he has like a multi-million dollar jewelry collection.
Aaron Rodgers like surfs and hangs out with famous people
and supermodels. And Andrew Luck is a Stanford graduate nerd. Like he is a grade A dork who's also exceptional at football. And none of that is a problem.
Dude, right. We'd be hard pressed to find a guy who does fit the old school paradigm who's either starting in the league or even being decent. Like, you know who fit that paradigm? Jake Locker. I mean, blue-collar family, like to hunt and fish. I mean, and again, nothing against the kid. He had the great physical tools, but, you know, that didn't work out. So, I mean, I think a lot of this, you know, kind of Cro-Magnon old-school thinking needs to just go out the window, and you got to evaluate
It's starting to happen because you know what's going to happen is like coaches who think like Mora are not going to draft Rosen. Coaches who think like, I don't know, Sean McVay or any of these other sort of next generation offensive coaches are like Andy Reid, for example, who's an old guy but still a creative coach. They don't care about this. They look at it and they go, what's his aptitude? How hard does he work? And then also the physical abilities. Yeah. I think Rosen is the safest bet to be a successful quarterback out of all the ones this year. I don't know that he has the highest ceiling, but he's the safest bet to be good.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think he's the most ready to step into a situation and play right away for sure. And, man, he throws a nice ball. There's a lot to love about Josh Rosen. I think he's better than Jared Goff was coming out of Cal. You know, very, very good player. My only area of old man concern vis-a-vis Josh Rosen is his name. So – in the same way that Jim Mora is concerned with his, you know, lack of hunting and fishing and his unusual kind of millennialness, I'm concerned with his name. So full disclosure, but I'm sure whatever team he goes to will be happy to work with him on that.
Maybe we should call him Yeshua instead.
I'd be okay with that actually.
Since he's got a Jewish last name, let's go with Yeshua Rosen. It would be sort of an out of the box name. Nobody quite knows how to peg it. Now all of a sudden he's not held down by the mediocre expectations of Joshness.
Dude, I love it. And we've got a little like old school, you know, Judaism kind of situation in the league, which I'm down with. So, Pipe, let's do talk for a minute about white and black quarterback paradigms, because I think we're running up against this in the draft with another guy that I know you and I really love as a player, and that's Lamar Jackson.
In the draft. Lamar Jackson is my favorite player in this draft. I don't know that he'll be the best, but he's definitely my favorite.
Dude, he's the most interesting, and he's the most fun to watch. And this guy, truly, Piper, burned college football to the ground at Louisville. To the degree that you can burn college football to the ground at Louisville, which is not a quote unquote, you know, elite or storied program in any way.
Right.
He did it, man. Statistically, he did it. you know, he played for Bobby Petrino, which means he ran a real offense. This guy has learned stuff. He's absorbed things.
He has zero negatives against him in terms of character stories out there of like him mistreating people on some, you know, Saturday night at the club. Like, there's none of this.
Right. Rosen has more of that than he has. Yeah. I mean, there's more concerns about Josh.
Yeah. A lot of these guys do. And he and Saquon Barkley are the two who everybody looks at and they're like, they're the perfect gentleman.
Absolutely.
And also wicked good football players.
So given that Lamar is your favorite player in the draft, I want to talk a little bit about like ideal fits for him. Where would you like to see him go?
So I said this when we talked quarterback drafts, you know, one of our first or quarterback prospects, one of our first sports episodes. So, you know, 6 months ago now or something like that.
Yeah.
I said New Orleans at the time because Drew Brees is under contract for a couple more years. But he's reaching that point where at some point he's not going to be worth the money or he's going to retire or something. And Lamar needs to go to somebody who's an offensive coach who's willing to shift his scheme to the talent he has. Sean Payton has shown the ability to do that.
Absolutely.
I think Lamar would also benefit from being in an NFL environment for a year or two to, you know, just to sort of get the speed of the game. Because it's a different game, and he's an elite athlete, but it's different using that athleticism in the NFL versus in college. Because running quarterbacks in the NFL need to be smart or they get killed.
Yeah.
Kind of like Robert Griffin did. And so New Orleans would be my favorite.
Yeah.
The alternative would be somewhere like Buffalo, where they haven't had a good quarterback since Jim Kelly.
Right.
And they have some decent talent, especially in the running game.
Yep.
And they could build an offense similar to what Houston did last year around a quarterback with some distinct flaws, but profound talent and elite athleticism. And in fact, Lamar Jackson is a much better athlete than Deshaun Watson. And equally as good of a thrower, I think. So in that case, he'd be starting from day one. And I would love that too. So I think, again, offensive coordinator who's going to put him in a position to succeed and either a chance to play behind an elite quarterback for a year or two, or a chance to go to a place where they kind of run a limited offense but built around his skill set and where the fans will love him. Like Buffalo fans would think
they would embrace Lamar.
I mean, they're completely insane in general. Yeah. And he would be their hero, and it would be fantastic.
It would be fantastic. Mine is actually the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ooh,
for
really
a lot of I think he would burn the league to the ground with Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. You know, he would have a minute to kind of groom behind Ben Roethlisberger. He would step in for
this. I just look at them and I'm like, I feel like they're a profoundly talented team and a really toxic environment. The impression I get is that it's all egos there, which is
– that's interesting. Like it's very un-Steeler-like historically.
Yeah,
but
historically they're like the blue-collar, you know, grit and grind, just smash you into the ground, steel curtain kind of thing. Even all the way up until, you know, up through the Jerome Bettis years and everything.
Yeah.
But now it feels like there's always contract disputes. Ben Roethlisberger is a man of questionable character and whiny ego, and he's always like, maybe I'll retire, maybe I won't. Like Antonio Brown seems like the only old school Steeler on, you know, of their prominent players. We're talking about the defense as much.
Yeah.
Because
he
just seems like a insanely talented, insanely hardworking. He's like Jerry Rice except 5'11".
Yeah, exactly. Dude, here's one for you for Lamar. What about Jacksonville?
Oh man.
Freaky defense, Leonard Fournette in the run game. Lost some of your weapons at wide receiver, so there's some question marks
They're another team, though, that I think he could be a great fit because the defense will take so much pressure off of him. And they showed the willingness to adjust their offense because they're like, well, we stink when Blake Bortles throws 40 times a game, so let's throw 11 times a game. If he falls that far, there's a lot of dumb teams in the NFL.
Dude, I'll lay one more on you. If he's there when New England picks, does Belichick pull the trigger? I mean, you're hitting the reset button anyway, offensively, when Brady goes.
I was just thinking about this earlier today because Tom Brady is, what, 40 years old? He threw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl and was one drive away from winning it. He didn't pull it off, but he was within striking distance. It wasn't like they went out there and he was like, oh, yes, he's old and dead.
Right.
I think
get old at some point.
Yeah, but I also think that they have two first-round picks now, I think.
Mm-hmm. They do.
I think they load up and
Try to make one more run behind Brady.
Yeah, and Belichick might trade back and get, you know, seven more second-round picks or something like that. But I think they try to load up around Brady to take full advantage of the years he has left. Because here's the other thing. When Brady retires, it's hard to imagine Belichick sticking around for too much longer after that. Because he's 70 years old or something like that. I mean, he's not a spring chicken, as they say.
Yeah, I think those two are going to – they're going to hit the – you know, hit the sunset together for sure. So
I guess the question there, you know, they did the whole thing with, you know, Josh McDaniels, you know, did a little bait and switch on the Colts and then went back there as the offensive coordinator, seemingly with the impression that he would be the next head coach. He is an offensive guy, also the guy who drafted Tim Tebow. So he apparently likes non-traditional quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson is infinitely better than Tebow as a quarterback prospect.
Yeah.
So there's potential there. I just don't think they would do it in the first round.
Yeah, no, I know. It seems unlikely that they would because they don't make flashy, you know, boom or bust type picks like that in the first round. But, man, it would be intriguing, and I would love to see it. I would actually love to see them sign Johnny Manziel. So this is a little like, you know, rabbit trail object of fascination for me. But I watched every minute of the Spring League. I don't know if you were aware that the Spring League was a thing that was happening that had Johnny Manziel in it,
I was aware of it because Johnny Manziel was in it, not for any other reason.
Yeah, it was real lo-fi, man. So it was just four games total, I think. And, they played 2 weeks of football there in Austin, Texas. And, I have to tell you, Piper, Johnny football looked pretty good. You know, the game itself was kind of ragged. The O-line play was very up and down, but Johnny football was doing Johnny football things. And it made me happy and it made me excited. And I think, you know, in lieu of sinking big currency into Lamar Jackson, you know, maybe you go bargain basement with Johnny football. There's no risk at all. You know, he doesn't cost anything at this point. And, you know, you get some of the same playmaking and skill set that you would have with Lamar with a player who wouldn't threaten Tom Brady. So Tom Brady doesn't feel, you know, any sense of, oh, there's an heir apparent in the building, I think, with Johnny football. But it's a guy that you get to try out. You get to kick the tires on Johnny Manziel for a very low price tag. Do you have any thoughts on the Johnny Manziel situation, Piper?
I really want to see Johnny Manziel in the NFL. I hope he can. Well, I would rather see Colin Kaepernick come back first because he actually deserves a job. Mm-hmm. Johnny Manziel, after that, deserves a chance. I don't know. He pretty well burned his way out, but I hope somebody gives him a second chance because I would just love to, I love comeback stories.
Yeah.
I love reclamation stories and I loved him as a quarterback and I really wanted him to see him succeed the first time. So
yeah,
it would be great if he came back.
I totally agree, man. I think it would be awesome. And yeah, like I've heard him on a few podcasts and he seems humble. He seems repentant. He's, you know, doing and saying all the right things right now. And I just love it economically. I mean, I love a guy who wasn't a complete washout on the field, who's only 25 years old, who you can get for nothing. You know, there's absolutely,
no downside. He actually did some stuff with the Browns. Like he was very undisciplined and they were a terrible team, but he did some stuff that you're like, he's a player. I mean,
absolutely.
He might be Doug Flutie.
Yeah.
But Doug Flutie was an NFL quarterback, you know, sort of a backup spot starter. Like if Manziel can get six more years in the NFL or eight more years as a backup who starts here and there, you know, starts the last four games after the quarterback, you know, starter goes down, that's a massive success story given what he has done to his own career.
Yeah, it's huge. Flutie was actually a pretty high-end starter on the back end of his career. So he was the guy that, you know, forced, I think – you know, there was overlap with Flutie and Drew Brees in San Diego. Flutie was the starter. Flutie started some years in Buffalo. So, you know, he had a very nice career toward the end. And I think you're right. I think a lot of the same skill set applies to Johnny football. So
speaking of San Diego, or should I say Los Angeles, whatever, the Southern California Chargers, I think that would be a great place for Lamar to end up.
Ooh, interesting. Because a little heir apparent to Phil Rivers.
Good,
I like
good
it.
Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Decent skill position players.
Yep.
New head coach who is a more creative offensive guy. And yep. Philip Rivers is 37, 38 years old. And again, sort of hanging in the balance. But
but
he's not so elite. Like Philip Rivers is the kind of guy, kind of like, I mean, he's sort of rare in that he's a highly successful quarterback who has won nothing, which means that it's easier for the team to pull the plug on him when the time comes. Whereas like Eli Manning is hard to do that with because he won Super Bowls despite being not very good. Rivers is better than Eli Manning as a quarterback, but has won nothing. And so if in a year or two they're like, yeah, we just don't want to pay you anymore, all of a sudden they have this explosive weapon waiting.
A great fit.
And they need to sell tickets because nobody cares about them.
Do. It's fast. I was just going to say that. I mean, you hate to make decisions in this kind of headspace, but they have to do something because – you know, the team across town, the LA Rams, they're loaded for bear. I mean, they've got all these exciting players on their roster, these big personalities. So, I mean, the Rams are a juggernaut from a marketing standpoint right now, whereas the Chargers feel like a semi-pro team. You know, I mean, there's nobody on their roster to get excited about at this point.
Well, I mean, even though that's the thing is like even though their defense actually is really good,
they got Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram. I mean, they've got
Keenan Allen has negative three ACLs and is still one of the leading receivers in the league. He's
absolutely
he is slow. He has no ACLs and he catches 100 passes a year. Because he's a wizard.
No, it's amazing, and he did it in front of 20,000 people.
That's right,
at home
nobody was there to see him.
You know, that franchise just in general is pretty fascinating to me. So they need to make a splash, man. I think Lamar could be a great fit there. So we know, Piper, that Lamar is your favorite player on the board. Who do you think is the best player on the board? Best football player, safest pick?
Quentin Nelson.
I agree, man. Took mine. Let's talk about our man crushes on Quentin Nelson because I love this player.
Well, if listeners want to read the truest man crush piece on Quentin Nelson, go just Google Robert Mays, The Ringer, Quentin Nelson. And Robert Mays is one of their NFL writers, co-hosts their NFL podcast, all of which is excellent. But he wrote a piece on Quentin Nelson that is just an effusive, gushing praise of the most dominant offensive lineman in this class.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. And I think that's, I mean, offensive linemen have a reputation as being safe picks, even though the last several years they haven't been, especially not the tackles.
Yeah.
But he's a guard, and he destroys everybody. He destroys guys who are the top in their class at defensive tackle and defensive end and linebacker.
Yeah.
And he plays in cold weather. And there's just sort of all of this. And his name, Quentin Nelson, like that sounds like just – A reputation destroyer. He just makes
a tough dude that you don't want a piece of.
Yeah, I don't want to fight somebody named Quentin Nelson. No, thank you.
Exactly.
So I think he is the best player in this draft as compared to his competition. I think Saquon Barkley is a super safe bet, but I don't think he's so much better than the other running backs.
Yeah.
Like, I think Darius Geis is 7% worse than him. I think all the other offensive linemen are like 27% worse than Quentin Nelson.
No, I totally agree, man. And yeah, I tend to be a fan of buying offensive linemen from certain schools, and Quentin Nelson does not go to one of those schools. However, he's dominant.
But
I mean, his film is just
Notre
freaky.
Dame has put in some really solid offensive linemen the last several years.
They have. Yeah, they have.
Very few who are super dominant, but multiple interior offensive linemen, a couple tackles, just guys who are 10-year pros, and like what else can you ask for? You want the next Jonathan Ogden or whatever, but you also can, you know, a plug and play 10-year guard is really nice.
Right. You would take Alan Faneca's career, and I think that's what you're looking at with Quentin Nelson. He could be better than Faneca.
Yeah, he might be Larry Allen.
Yeah, he might be Larry Allen, exactly. So I think if that player's there, you take him, and gosh, I hope he falls to the Bears. He won't, but I wish he would. Piper,
he might, because with all of this mad craziness about quarterbacks, there's going to be like he and Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb's another one who's going to be an 8 to 10 year NFL, you know, borderline Pro Bowler, really good player.
Yeah.
Those guys could end up at 6 or 7 because
they could
five quarterbacks
because
or
the
four
quarterbacks
craziness. could get shoved to the top of the draft, whether or not they deserve it.
So here's how the Browns could screw this thing up, man. And I think we have a little bit of divergence on Bradley Chubb, who I like as a player. I liked his film. He was very dominant at NC State, really nice player. But pass rushers are extremely risky. Also, you know, you look at the body of work of the last, you know, handful of quote unquote elite pass rushers that have come into the league. And, you know, you could argue that they don't make the kind of impact that we have come to sort of hype pass rushers as making. And I think in part because the game has changed. Yeah. So the ball's out quicker.
It's so much quick passing now.
Yeah, the game is so much more horizontal now than it is vertical. I think you've negated, in a sense, the Jadeveon Clowneys, even the Mario Williams of the world, these elite, you know, blue chip freaky pass rushers. You know, you could argue that the impact wasn't huge. So I think if the Browns come out of the first round having drafted Josh Allen and Bradley Chubb, that could be a disaster for them. Not so much because of who Bradley Chubb is in a vacuum, but
if they draft Josh Allen, it doesn't matter what they do with the number four pick. They could trade it for seven future first round picks. If they draft Josh Allen, they get eight more years of being a terrible team. He is going to lose a general manager his job. It's going to happen.
Dude, if I'm the Browns, honest to gosh, man, if I'm the Browns, I take Quentin Nelson and Saquon Barkley. These are the two best football players on the board, consensus. I mean, I think
everybody... You don't draft a quarterback at all.
Maybe not. You know, if I'm not in love with one of those guys, so if I have major concerns about Darnold's ball security or Rosen's millennialness or Josh Allen being bad at football or whatever, like, I just... Maybe I'm not pulling the trigger on those guys. Maybe I grab a Mason Rudolph in round two but... Maybe I say Tyrod is my guy.
Mason Rudolph's ceiling is like Matt Schaub at the end of his career.
Yeah, no, Mason Rudolph was a bad example. But there are guys to be had who are more interesting than Mason Rudolph. But I think they
have to take a quarterback. And
they probably do.
I recognize that the safest thing to do is take that guy at number one, because then you get the guy you want. But there's almost no chance that the three quarterbacks they like most go 1, 2, and 3.
Correct.
Which means I'd be intrigued by taking somebody like Quentin Nelson first overall and then getting a quarterback at 4, kind of whoever's left. They might get stuck with Josh Allen, though, in which case their GM loses the job. So I think they have to take Rosen or Darnold number one overall.
So if you're the Browns, if you're John Dorsey, who do you take with that pick?
I probably take Darnold.
Yeah, I take Darnold too. I mean, I think in a real world scenario, if I'm John Dorsey, I take Darnold, and then I take Saquon or Quentin Nelson.
Yeah.
F4.
I might try to trade out of 4 because of all the other quarterbacks. Like, it's like for example, Buffalo has 2 first round picks and is very interested in a quarterback. I might try to get their 2 first and a second and a future second or something like that. So because the Browns are still They need some talent, especially in their defensive backfield. And there's some good corners and safeties who are middle round picks. So if they moved back to, what is that, like 12 and 20 or whatever those picks are, I think I might do that. Because Saquon's good, but star running backs, A, can be had later in the draft.
Sure.
And B, are not game changers.
Yeah, I mean, it depends
They're good pieces, but they're not game changers.
If you look at Saquon and you go, we've got an Ezekiel Elliott or a Todd Gurley here, then I think I disagree, and I think you have to take
Gurley,
him.
But Gurley didn't do anything for that team for 2 years until an offensive coordinator came in who figured out, we can run an offense that does some different things. Like, he's not do you trust Hugh Jackson? I don't.
No, I don't. Yeah, no. not as far as I can throw him. Of course I don't, because he's Hugh Jackson. But, I don't know. I think it's – and maybe it's – maybe it's my own flawed thinking in terms of how can the Browns not screw these picks up? Because if you're the Browns and you've got this like rich, lavish history of screwing up draft choices in the first round, maybe I'm just looking for safety when I should not be. But
they have the luxury of options. And I mean, the safest thing to do is to take Darnold or Rosen, number one, and Barkley at 4. I would say Chubb would be a great fit at 4, especially because playing across from Myles Garrett, what we have seen is while a single pass rusher doesn't change a defense, an elite defensive line does, and those two guys are real nice bookends. So I think Chubb would be a good pick there. That's the safest bet. If they trade back, they're moving out of that elite talent range, and that's iffy because then you have to, can they actually, can they judge some talent? And who knows?
Yeah, and if you move back into mid first, I mean, you're looking at some really nice, like, off-ball type linebackers. Yeah. I mean, you got Roquan Smith, you got Tremaine Edmonds. I mean, there's some guys there that would absolutely help their defense. But then you're getting into more of a nitty-gritty of judging talent, and the Browns have been startlingly bad at that. But Piper, I know you have to run to a meeting. I've got stuff I have to do. But let's talk for a minute about our favorite draft picks of all time for our favorite team. So I want to hear your favorite Viking draft pick or picks of all time. And this isn't necessarily the best Viking player or favorite players, but who have been your favorite picks of all time?
My favorite pick, the pick that got me, I was skipping around like a little, like a small schoolgirl playing hopscotch, was Adrian Peterson. He was also their best running back ever.
Yeah. And also maybe the safest pick in that draft.
I think they
worked on so many levels.
I think they picked him number 7 overall. Yeah. And he's who I wanted them to pick. He's who, leading up to the draft, I just was hoping and hoping and hoping. And then they did. And then he completely justified the pick. And the NFL was different then. So a star running back actually did make a difference until the last couple years.
Maybe the NFL's last true workhorse running
back. Yeah, it's like he and Marshawn Lynch are sort of like that guy.
The guys you could feed the ball to 25, 30 times a game, and they just
you still hear analysts talk about a 20 carry a game guy, and I'm like, I don't think any running back got 20 carries in a game more than maybe four times last year, three times.
Right.
Whereas
right.
Peterson would get 20 carries a game. If they didn't get him 20, it meant they were losing by 100 or winning by 100. Any other time, it was 20 plus carries. So Randy Moss is my second because at the time, I couldn't believe that he fell to the 21st pick.
And he was tremendous value in that draft.
He was like second in the Heisman voting at wide receiver. And for a wide receiver to be that recognized coming out of Marshall, you knew that he was just a monster, a complete and utter freak. And then his first preseason game, he wasn't wearing number 84 yet. I think he was wearing number 18, sort of like one of those random preseason numbers, just destroyed some terrible cornerback, some third-string cornerback, just made him look the fool. And from then on, he had won my heart. The third one was Matt Burke.
Matt Burke, yes.
Who was he was either a sixth or a seventh round pick out of Harvard.
Harvard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Harvard.
Also, Twin Cities guy, went to Creighton-Durham Hall, same school that Joe Maurer, the Twins catcher, went to, for example. Yep. Creighton-Durham has put so many guys into the pros in different sports. They're nuts. But Matt Burke was, he's an undersized center, but he anchored the Vikings line for about 10 years, including some of their very best lines. Phenomenal player. And he was, he's a late round pick. The Vikings have killed with late round centers.
They have.
They think they've done sixth and seventh round centers have been anchoring their line for the last 15 years.
It's interesting, man. You're looking for a really smart player there. You can kind of hide some physical limitations at that position. Late rounds are a good time to shop.
And it was a position because of the way defenses ran in the NFL that for a long time was undervalued. People looked for smart but not talented.
Yep.
And now they're starting to recognize that a talented center can make an offensive line really, really good.
Absolutely.
Like the Alex Max of the world and that kind of guy.
Absolutely, for sure, man. Dude, speaking of guys wearing weird numbers in the preseason, so I was watching some 85 Bears preseason film the other day, and they played Buffalo in the preseason, as one does. And they're playing the Bills, and it was Andre Reed's first preseason with the Bills, and he was wearing number 46. He had this baggy jersey, number 46. He was either a late round guy or an undrafted free agent out of Kutztown State in Pennsylvania, and wearing number 46. And he just lit the Bears up. So Frank Reich was a rookie. He was playing quarterback in the second half, slinging the ball all over the yard to Andre Reed, and that was really fun to see. So Andre Reed, if you've got that number 46 preseason jersey, I would love to have it for my man cave. My favorite picks, Pipe. So I got to provide a little context. So as a child, I was a Bears fan, but I was also a Colts fan because I grew up in like Cornfield, Indiana, just north of Indianapolis. So would always go to training camps in Anderson. That was where the Colts had their preseason training camps. And one year they had two first round draft picks, and they used those picks on a defensive tackle named Steve Entman and an outside linebacker named Quentin Coriat.
Entman was number one overall.
Dude, Coriat was so good. And Coriat had this college film, this highlight where he like nearly killed a dude coming across the middle on a slant and just lit him up, just nearly took his head off. And Coriat just looked like if God were to like whittle a linebacker out of a lump of clay, it would look like Quentin Coriat, you know, just physically gifted. And so
and
I was
that name. Quentin and the name
Quentin
name.
Coriat. Yeah, you're not, again, you're not failing if your name is Quentin. So I was excited about him, but I was really excited about Steve Entman because Entman was this huge corn-fed University of Washington dude with a huge neck roll, you know, bench pressed like a zillion pounds and was completely dominant in college and would have been completely dominant in the pros were it not for some neck and knee injuries that derailed him. So I get really, really mad when I see these NFL bust, you know, top 10 lists that come out every year around draft time and they have Steve Entman on them because, dude, I can tell you from watching, you know, his first year or two in the league up close in Indianapolis, that guy was a freak show.
Yeah.
He would have, you know, ragdolled the league for a decade plus had he stayed healthy. So those are my favorites. Quentin Coriat and Steve Entman, wherever you are appreciated by the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. And
before we go, I do have one more that was, you know, because the ones I mentioned previously were all massive successes in their NFL career. This guy is not. But I was so happy when they made the pick. And it was Cordarrelle Patterson.
Okay. The Vikings, talk about that, man. The speedster from Tennessee.
Yes. So 6'3", 220-pound wide receiver out of Tennessee, you know, known to be raw. Lesson learned, raw wide receivers tend to be terrible. But
see also Troy Williamson.
Yeah, see also every Raiders draft pick at wide receiver ever. So, but the Vikings had been really bad at wide receivers since Moss was traded. They'd had Sidney Rice and Percy Harvin for a little while. Harvin was another one who I was super excited about because Harvin – but then he got traded, had some headache issues.
Gosh, man, you guys have had like – yeah, you guys have had a rash of those types of guys.
So Harvin was an elite talent, and Patterson was supposed to be that except bigger. And they traded up in the first round to get him, and I was so excited. In his rookie year, it was very clear he was raw, you know, sort of a special package player with some screens and kick returns and things like that.
Yep.
And then years two and three – he got worse.
Yeah.
And he went from like a 9-touchdown guy to a 3-touchdown guy to a 3-touch guy to a on the Raiders guy to a he was just signed by New England to be a special teams ace guy.
Dude, like
now, good for him for finding a niche in the league and for sticking with it. He didn't become some diva who thought, I'm a number one wide receiver and I'm not going to do this.
Yeah. But dude, making $500,000 a year being a gunner. On the punt team is still a pretty good living at the end of the day.
And one of the best kick returners in the league, except that they've sort of done away with kick returning. But he was somebody I was super excited about who was definitely not a star.
Oh, that's a good one, man. That's a really good one. Yeah, the last one of mine like that, again, from growing up in Indianapolis, was Jeff George. My dad and I went to see one of Jeff George's first training camp practices as an Indianapolis Colt. And this was a different era, man. This is when you could go to like – you could go to an NFL training camp and you know, go right up to the edge of the field and watch practice. And I remember thinking Jeff came helmet and shoulder pad and shorts practices. And he had his helmet and shoulder pads on, but his shorts were like flowered Hawaiian shorts. He just wore a pair of Hawaiian shorts out of the practice field. And their head coach at the time was Rick Venturi. And my dad and I were standing – you know, we're waiting in line to go to the porta potty and Rick Venturi comes out smoking a cigarette and he's smoking a cigarette. Jeff George is wearing Hawaiian shorts. And I just thought, oh my goodness, man, this is pro football right here. This is pro football in the early 90s. You know, that's all you need to know.
Oh, Jeff but George. He was Piper, former Viking quarterback.
Another former Viking, man. He had a cup of coffee with like a dozen teams in the league, I think, including the Raiders. So, Pipe, we have done what we always do on this program, and we have wandered to and fro throughout the NFL draft. We will enjoy it. We hope you enjoy it too. And until next time, Cordero Patterson.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.